The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Well, well, well. Happy Friday morning to everyone. What do we have here? Yes, that is not. For anyone watching live on YouTube, can't wait to see the comments stroll in. If you're just listening, you're like, what is Norlander going on about? Why is Norlander oh, wait, did Parrish say that he had to go to the dentist? That's correct. If you're watching live on YouTube, that's David Cobb, CBS sports writer, making his Eye on College Basketball podcast debut the morning after the most absurd ending we've had so far this season in college basketball. And we have so much to get to. And I can't wait to see the viewers in real time react to the fact that Parrish is not on this. He's not on this show. And they're going to be like, wait, who is this dude? David, say hello. Give your life story in 25 seconds.
Yeah, hello. First off, I'm not Gary Parrish. You can see that by this beautiful head of hair that I have here. There's one distinct difference between Gary and I, although we both are from the Memphis metropolitan area. We have some similarities in our background, actually. Both worked at the Commercial Appeal prior to coming over to CBS. For me, I covered the Grizzlies for about a year and a half as the beat writer. I have a background in college sports, though. Covered Tennessee for the Chattanooga Times Free Press for a couple years, football and basketball. And so been with CBS for a couple years now. Avid listener of the pod. And Matt, I think it's kind of disappointing, actually, that no shouts to Devin Downey. I mean, no shouts to Leaky Black. We're just not going to talk about camel fighting.
No. I don't do that shtick. No, this is we're gonna change it up a little bit here.
Disrespectful, Gary.
Hey, listen, the handsomeness quotient of this podcast has skyrocketed this morning, just out of this world amazing. So, again, if you are not already subscribed to the YouTube page, please make sure you do that. And if you are watching right now, if you're watching in real time, click the like button. See, here's how this works. Parrish never explains this at the top of the show. If you click the like button, hit that thumbs up, it boosts the engagement. It gets more people that could be watching that might be just strolling around the streets of YouTube at 10 a.m. on a Friday morning, wanting to hear about Rutgers beating Purdue at the buzzer. It might, flare onto their radar, however the YouTubes work, right? Whatever. It boosts the channel. So please like it if you haven't already. Of course, ding the bell. Subscribe to the channel. There will be a link in this podcast episode. Nada will put it in there so you can subscribe. The best way you can support this podcast is to leave reviews and Apple reviews, continue to listen, but also to subscribe to the YouTube channel so that we can get really cool things and stuff to give away to you. Eye on College Basketball and CBS merch, that is coming later this season. Also, we are going to eventually be doing YouTube-only content, little 5, 10, 15-minute quick bites, stuff that won't be in the podcast feed. That's another reason why you're going to want to subscribe to the YouTube channel. And for everyone listening today, listen, no Parrish here. We're going to do a live viewer Q&A chat at the end of the episode. So if you've got a question, hoops or otherwise, toss it in the chat. If Nada sees a good one or two, he'll send one to me privately. I will also try and monitor this in real time, but that'll be at the end of the episode. It's a wonderful to have you here, Cobb. Parrish is getting his wisdom teeth taken out. I believe I had a person in my mentions refer to him as Dead Tooth on Thursday, which Dead Tooth.
I was actually mad. I was kind of hoping we'd get like Opioid Gary on this show. But
yeah, I know. Well, and that's the other thing. One more thing before we get to Rutgers-Purdue, which I cannot wait to talk about. We don't know if Parrish is going to be available on Sunday or not. His drug situation, his mouth situation, we don't know. If he is not available, I have another potential surprise that I might be working on here. So that's where we're at. Thank you to everyone that showed up here on Friday morning to watch live on YouTube. You are so, so very appreciated. All right. So that's Cobb. Welcome to the fold. Shouts to Kyle Boone, who I know is listening, and Kyle gets to go home this weekend as he continues his battle through cancer. And I talked to his wife on Thursday. I've had a few people reach out wondering how he's doing. Told he's doing well, but the process goes on. Buddy, we love you. We're thinking of you. Okay. Rutgers. Man, it's so we go into Thursday, right, Cobb? And I'm thinking, all right, Friday episode, maybe it'll be a little bit slow, but we'll have plenty of stuff to talk about. Maybe we look, you know, 1 month in, who's our coach of the year, front runner, our players of the year? And then Rutgers obliterates that. New Jersey was the center of the college basketball world on Thursday night. Purdue immediately loses as the number one team in the country. I've got some great audio I want to play, but let me toss it over to you. When did you dial into this thing? I was watching from the get-go, but was this one of those games where you thought, just kind of keep an eye, but I don't know. And what are your thoughts on what Rutgers was able to do in having Purdue go ultimate Purdue? That program just can't have nice things.
Yeah, you know, so we're traveling like for the holidays, right? So I don't have my normal two screen setups, you know, my multiple games at once environment. So I actually had to watch the college football awards show for some duties I had in the college football room. And I had Texas Seton Hall up on the TV, and I had the award show on my iPad. And in my mind, Rutgers-Purdue is an afterthought last night. You know, it's one of those that you're going to look at the stats on. But for me, I was far more interested in seeing if Texas, you know, could beat a good team, because that was only the second good team they played all season last night. And then, you know, when that game ends, you got to make a decision, right? You're like, okay, 8-point game, is Rutgers Purdue worth changing the channel for, right? Like, that's a decision you got to make. And, you know, I thought, yeah, okay, it's the number one team. There's no other alternatives, really. So, I mean, thankfully, there wasn't another game of interest on, or else I might not have turned to Rutgers Purdue until, you know, the final 20 seconds of the game. But, you know, I caught the last 6 minutes of it. You know, I've gone back and kind of gone through the play-by-plays and the highlights and stuff to catch up on what happened before then. And just an awesome ending for Rutgers, because that program, I feel like, hasn't really had the chance to celebrate what's been one of their best years yet. And so to see them get to rush the court after finally snapping the NCAA tournament drought last season, but in the COVID environment, you know, for them to get that moment in the home arena, in the rack, as they call it, pretty special.
That's right. It's the rack. It's the rack, and it's only the rack, not Subway Arena or whatever GP called it on the other episode there. Man, you hit on something that I talked about on HQ Thursday night. We're still in the dumbest pandemic of our lifetimes. You know, here in the Northeast where I live, you know, cases are really, they're spiking across the region. And so there's, you know, there's obviously still plenty of precaution and caution out there, but a lot of these buildings, a lot of these universities, like, you have to show proof of vaccination to get in. So there's this idea that at least you're trying to make it as safe of an environment as possible while returning to some sense of normalcy. So for Rutgers to get that moment in that spot, the way that it played out was just unbelievable.
The guy who did it too, that it was Harper. Because he's been there the whole time, right? Like,
yes.
So that was amazing. And it stinks that Geo Baker, you know, was unavailable for that game, because he's another one of those dudes that's kind of helped them have their little renaissance. And the fact that it feels like that renaissance may be ending, we don't know what Rutgers is going to do from here. They could go 4-16 in the Big Ten, or, you know, they could plod their way to, you know, 10-10 maybe. But, you know, for them to have that after the way November went for them, that was something else.
Rutgers had a 3-game losing streak against DePaul, Lafayette, which is 296 in KenPom and 2-7 this season, and UMass also was non-competitive last Friday in a just 35-point beatdown at Illinois. There was no indication that Rutgers was going to be able to do this. This is why we love college basketball. Results like this doesn't have to happen in March, doesn't have to happen in February. You have these moments of complete insanity. They'll just pop up at any point here. And again, if that had happened a year ago with, you know, just remove Purdue as the number one team, just put two other teams there, right? And there are no fans. It's still an incredible moment. We're still leading a podcast with it, but you have the fan element there. It's incredible. I'm going to call this, I'm calling it the Piscataway Prayer. Are we good with that? I feel like a shot of that gravity for a program at Rutgers, which lacks significant history in men's college basketball. I mean, it was either Harper's Heave, which is solid, but it wasn't really a heave. It was a Euro step kind of
shot.
Yeah, right? From 40 feet out. Piscataway Prayer.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, kudos to Ron Harper for the way he executed on that play. You know, he gets his momentum going towards half court as he's receiving the inbounds pass, right? I thought Purdue did a pretty decent job of at least playing, like, you know, some defense, right? Like Ivy and I forget who the other guy, Ethan Morton, had him double teamed. And so for him to have the sort of IQ or awareness that he could step through the way he did, you know, with that little time on the clock and get a shot of that quality off, that was pretty special. I mean, just a really, you know, it was a veteran play to get that good of a look in that situation. And like, if anyone's coming after Purdue for the way they play defense there, I would say to, you know, hold off, because the last thing you want to do in that moment when you're up one is foul. And so I thought Ivy and Morton did a really good job of playing defense without even giving the appearance of maybe fouling. And at that point, I mean, you know, he probably hits that shot one out of 20 times, and you just got to tip your cap.
All right, here's how this played out at the end, because the shot and kind of what Williams did before got plenty of run. And if you're watching on YouTube right now, Nada is bringing up the KenPom box score of what we had there. So first of all, Harper makes a beautiful pass to Mag with 107 to go. It makes a 66-65 game. In that moment, Rutgers takes the lead, okay? It's the first lead for Rutgers, I think, since the first half. Travion Williams turns it over. Harper then turns it over because he tries to make that pass. He saw McConnell making a backdoor cut. McConnell hesitates. Harper, but then he lets go of the pass, and it's a turnover. It would have been a wide open bucket. Purdue was asleep. I think Ivy was asleep on that play. It would have been a 1-point game with 23 seconds to go. But then Rutgers pressures, right? It gets Ivy in the corner. I think that's how it goes here. Yeah, it's Ivy in the corner on the trap. Okay.
Right, and he travels. Yeah.
Travels. So Rutgers has life again. To me, it was the three or four plays before the big one. It's always the story before the story, right? The story before the moment that leads up to it. The Ivy trap and travel, I thought, was the thing that made this whole thing possible there. Then Harper makes up for the turnover with this silky fadeaway, gets them back on top by 1 point with 13 to go. Then Painter does what he should do. He runs it to Travion Williams, who gets it into the post, has a beautiful move, gets it up and in. And again, college basketball, never change this rule. Do not have teams have the ability to advance the ball to half court after a stoppage and play in a timeout. You have so many more memorable, unforgettable, chaotic moments like this.
And Rutgers didn't have one. They were out.
Correct. But I'm just saying, in general, this is why, because you know what this had whiffs of, Cop? This is UCLA Gonzaga in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Quick bucket for one team. And in fact, it was going the same way. It was the bucket going that way. And then there's no stoppage of play. One guy gets the ball, brings it up the floor. And I think Suggs was 37 feet. I want to say Harper was about 40. He was right on that R, right where the jersey, jersey logo was coming from. And he hits it. And what a phenomenal, again, the Piscataway Prayer. Let's make it a thing, man. Just incredible. I've got three bits of audio that I want to play for you here. Three of them, because this is such an awesome, huge moment that I could not give the full thing. So the first one here, this is Brandon Godden and Robbie Hummel. And again, if you're watching on YouTube, we don't have the video rights to this, so I cannot show you the play in real time. That is not allowed. But we can play you the audio. This is how it sounded on the Big Ten Network. Brandon Godden's call here is phenomenal. This is Williams getting the bucket to put Purdue up. And then, of course, Harper hitting the game winner.
Hunter to Stefanovic. Here he is, Williams. Patient. Going to work. Got it! The answer! 3 seconds. No timeouts. Harper for the win! Oh! At the buzzer!
Shouts to Brandon Godden for that. Notice, first of all, shouts to Hummel. He lays out on that call. Hummel isn't stepping over it at all. And then Godden lets the environment take over. He's a underrated up-and-coming play-by-play dude. Brandon Godden, great call on the Big Ten Network. Okay, call number two. This is Learfield IMG with the call. This is the Rutgers radio call here. Your play-by-play guy is Jerry Recco. Austin Johnson, your former Rutgers player, is the color analyst, new to the form. He does step all over this call, but I do love this one all the same. Shouts to Tim Burke, Bubba Prague on Twitter. He grabbed this. This is Rutgers Learfield IMG Radio. Here's how it played out.
Stefanovich inside Williams with seven. One-on-one with Amori. Gets inside, puts it up and in with 3.4 to go. Get it to Harper with three, with two, with one. Harper for the win. Got it! Let's go! Let's go! Harper Jr. Let's go! The game winner at the buzzer. Let's go! And Rutgers upsets number Purdue 70-68. Let's go! First time in program history that they have beaten a number one team. But they're going to check the tape.
Let's go.
Score the basket. Ball game.
Let's go!
And the student in Storm.
I thought I had found that one last night, but I definitely didn't, because that the let's goes are phenomenal.
Just
let's go.
Also, like shout out to Robbie Hummel for not like dropping an F-bomb as his alma mater loses number one in the country in all likelihood, you know, when they just got there for the first time in program history. He held it together pretty well. And fun fact about that moment as well, Matt, as you know, in a lot of these situations, I don't know what kind of cable you have, but I stream via Fubo. And so, you know, sometimes a solid 45 seconds behind what's actually happening on the court. So in a situation like that, where I know we might need a quick story, I've got Stat Broadcast pulled up, which is very much live or close to it. And so, you know, Ron Harper, I've got his fadeaway go-ahead jumper like a solid 30-plus seconds before it actually happens on my screen. So I'm working that into a little, you know, document on the side so I can make note of it in the article if we have to write one. Well, I keep looking at Stat Broadcast in the final 5 seconds, and I'm like, oh, they must have called a timeout. Like, nothing, it's not showing me the game is over. Then I look back to my screen, and the play is actually unfolding. And so in that way, I was glad it lagged out, because I got to enjoy it live rather than having it shown to me on the live stats.
I hear you 100%. And when you live that streaming life, when I watch games up here in my office, I've got two, we can't see it because it's off screen, but I've got two TVs here and I've got an iPad. But when you stream, you got that lag. So I actually don't have Twitter up often when I'm doing that, because I don't want it spoiled. With this last night, there are really only two games worth watching. So I was able to watch that live and in real time. We have a third play-by-play call. Jake Schmid, I believe. Your moment of glory has arrived. This is Student Radio, WRSU. And my man drops a call here that is going into my audio bank immediately. This is Jake Schmid, Rutgers student, last night. Let's give it a listen.
0.4 to go. Harper Jr. crossing that timeline. No timeout. Crossing the timeline. Last second heave. Oh, it's good. Down go the Boilermakers. Down. The train is off the tracks. The train is off the tracks. The train is off the tracks. Down goes number one. Oh, my goodness. The train is off the tracks.
We absolutely love it. Jake Schmid, the train is off the tracks, is going into the audio bank there. So three huge calls. Hope you got goosebumps if you're listening at home, because that was incredible here. Let me give you a couple of goodies from this game before we talk about fallout real quick. So ESPN Stats and Info had this. Ron Harper Jr., first player ever to get 30 in a game and hit the buzzer-beating shot against the number one ranked team. Rutgers was 0-11 going into this against number one teams. Purdue joins the likes of, and I saw this on Scott Van Pelt's SportsCenter show, number one ranked teams to lose on a buzzer-beating shot since 2001. Michigan State did it against Indiana. I saw the video of this. I don't remember that game, but the other ones I do. Today is literally 10 years to the day from Christian Watford beating Kentucky at Assembly Hall, December 10th, 2011. Watford shot. Kentucky was number one. That was the same day as Xavier Cincinnati Zip 'em Up. So we are actually at the 10-year anniversary of Zip 'em Up. We will talk Cincinnati X in a little bit here, so keep an eye out for that. You also had Illinois beating Indiana in 2013. I remember that game. And then we are a little more than 2 years removed from number one Duke losing at the buzzer on a play that's as memorable as almost any other non-Suggs version of the past 5 years, when Stephen F. Austin won at Duke. By the way, teams that have lost their first game as a number one team ever to an unranked opponent. Illinois did it in 1952. Memphis State did it in 1983. I had forgotten about this one. St. Joe's, 2004. I saw this last night, and I knew it, but I forgot I knew it kind of deal. St. Joe's gets to the point where it's 27-0 with Jameer Nelson, Delonte West, Pat Carroll. Just an incredibly fun team, right? They play Xavier in the quarters of the A-10. They are the number one ranked team in the country. They promptly lose to the eight-seeded Xavier Musketeers. And then the other team that has lost, first time at number one, Wisconsin in 2007. That's not it. A couple more for you. Teams that famously got to number one and then promptly lost after getting there for the first time. Cobb, you're probably too young for this. I don't know if Parrish will remember this, but he might fake that he would. Back in 2003, Kentucky played Florida. Florida had never been number one before. They played them on a Tuesday night, and I think they played at Kentucky. They promptly lost by 15 points. And then when Tennessee had to play Memphis, 2008?
I remember that one.
That was another big one there. So there is a history, Purdue fans, of teams either getting to number one for the first time and then promptly vomiting all over their shoes, or teams number one losing on a buzzer.
Matt, I've got a trivia time for you.
Oh, boy. I'm not ready for this.
Hey, by the way, I just want to preface this by saying, for your listeners out there who keep tally, and I'm an avid listener, so I'm aware of the fact that you've got some folks out there who do keep a tally. You should absolutely add this one to Norlander's tally, even though I'm not Gary Parrish. I have far more hair than Gary. And I'm going to trivia time you here, Matt. When was the last time that week five of the AP poll, that'll be Monday, that'll be week five of the AP poll. When was the last time that week five brought us our fourth different number one team of the season?
So it's got to be that season that was recently. My brain just can't decide if that was 17, 18, or 18, 19. I'm pretty sure it was 18, 19. So 18, 19 was the year that Virginia won. But that is my final answer. Because I remember us talking on the pod. We wrote a bunch about this. There was something about that season where I think by January or early February, we had more teams occupy the number one ranking in the AP Top 25 than any it might have been by Christmas. So yeah, 18-19 is my guess.
Okay, it's a good guess because you're remembering that season correctly, I think. But in terms of the early upheaval, it was actually 2019-20. You had, let me refer to my notes here, Michigan State debuting at number one. Kentucky then had it for a week. Then Duke had it for two. And then Louisville slipped in there at some point as well. So, but before that, the last time it happened was 1987-88. So it's pretty rare. And I mean, unless something crazy happens on Sunday in Baylor Villanova and the voters just go nuts, we're going to have, you know, our fourth number one team of the season. It'll be the third time since, you know, the 1987-88 season.
How about that? So it was 1 year later than I thought. That's an X for me. That's an incorrect answer. But look at you stepping into not just anyone can step into a trivia time situation, and you did it with aplomb.
I'm not gonna lie. I spent about half an hour on collegepollarchive.com last night, coming up with that one. So
love it. Yeah. Love it. As Cobb mentioned earlier, Rutgers does this with no Geo Baker. He's out with the flu. Rutgers only had five guys play double digit minutes in this game. Purdue had nine. Trevion Williams went with 21 points, 11 rebounds.
Who is Purdue's lockdown perimeter defender? I understand Ron Harper Jr. is a tough matchup, Because what is he? You know, he's kind of that hard size to guard. But, you know, if Purdue in the NCAA tournament needs to lock down a Johnny Juzang or a Justin Moore or an Ochai Agbaji, who are they turning to? Like, who's that guy for them?
Don't necessarily have one yet. Now, Ivy is certainly capable. He's got to improve and really lean in on it, but that's just not what he's known to be yet. He's not defense optional. He is not a high level defender, even though he has the athleticism and the build to certainly get there. He's just not there yet. They don't have that kind of guy. I think they have guys who can make plays occasionally there. Like Stefanovic is tougher than people think, and he's not just a 3-point shooter. And I think that, you know, Eric Hunter has decent amount of length, but to your direct question, that is maybe one key. It's one key thing that Purdue is missing. Also, I will note this: after Purdue started the season by getting 80 or more in every single game, it did win a week ago at home with quote unquote only 77, and then they only get 68 here against Rutgers. Still, the number one rated offense per KenPom this morning are the Boilermakers and sit at number two in the KenPom rankings. But for Rutgers to hold. Man, I don't know if Purdue will be held under 70 more than one more game between now and the NCAA tournament. It was a hell of a performance for Steve Peichel and his team to get that win. We're down to 8 unbeatens, by the way. Baylor, Arizona, USC, LSU, Arkansas, your San Francisco Dons, 10-0, best record in the country, Colorado State, and Iowa State, who we will get to in just a second there, man. But
so if Villanova beats Baylor on Sunday, who's your number one?
You know what? We'll get to that when we preview the games. I got to think about that a little bit, man. But man, I'm so happy we were able to start with that kind of game. And for all the podcasts for you to join for the first time, it's this one. I will mention one more thing. I don't know if it's been brought up in the comments yet or not. Yes, yes, yes. The clock started late. Okay. Credit to Tim Burke again, because Tim Burke does things that no one else in the media can do. He used to work for Deadspin. If you're on Twitter and you follow sports, you've seen him. He's at Bubba Prague. He's a wonderful follow there. He can literally look at a feed broken down by frames, literally the video frames. All right. And that equates to time into seconds. And so he had tweeted there was 3.4 on the clock after Williams made the shot and the clock stopped from the time that the ball touches Harper's hands to him releasing the ball is 3.520 seconds. There was 3.41 on the clock, which means Harper got an extra 0.12 seconds. The clock did start late. He got the shot off. This is so minuscule to me. Like, I understand if you're a Purdue fan and you're a little like, come on, man. But I just can't get too up in arms about that overall. I mean, you know, Rutgers shot 50% from three. Purdue was 27%, Cobb. Rutgers was 53% from inside the arc. Purdue was 51%. Rutgers outshot him. Rutgers was 72% from the line. Purdue was 69%. So I just can't get too worked up about the clock issue. It wasn't egregious. Was it right on it? No, it wasn't right on it. But that was certainly a talking point after the game in terms of like Harper had a little bit. He had a beat, and he did have a beat, but it wasn't so ridiculous that we should make a stink about it. Unless you're a Purdue fan, I get it. But the bottom line is factually, he did get 0.12 seconds extra time to get that shot off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he doesn't have time for that step through, probably. I mean, the Purdue defenders clearly didn't think he had time for the step through because they kind of let their guard down in that last half of the second.
I mean, if you're Painter, you run a great play for Williams, and then you just get Painter said this in the postgame presser. I'll mention this and then we'll scoot along here. Talk about the other team in Jersey. But he said, listen, Gene Katie used to always say, you go on the road, you got to beat them by 10. Cause if it's close, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but chaotic and weird things can happen. That did happen to Purdue. They kept it too close. And then a guy beats you on a Euro step from like 40 feet out. What can you do? Phenomenal game. We have opened a Friday podcast talking for almost 27, 28 minutes about Rutgers basketball, your family, your religion, and Rutgers basketball. Rutgers wasn't the only big team that got a huge win on Thursday night. Seton Hall beat Texas, and we're going to talk about that in 1 second. But first, how about a word from our sponsors?
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Texas loses on Thursday night. We can talk about the Longhorns being a letdown so far, certainly. But before we get to that, Cobb, we got to give Jersey its moment. Monmouth couldn't win at St. John's, so it's not the biggest night in the history of New Jersey basketball. I'm sorry. You need a Monmouth win for that to be factually true. Seton Hall wins. By the way, Rutgers is playing at Seton Hall on Sunday. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. I love the fact that these two schools are coming off of huge wins. The first time ever that both of them beat top 10 opponents on the same night. They get it done. They both get it done at home. There was a number of national media. I actually almost went to this Texas Seton Hall game. It was, but from Connecticut down to the Rock, as they call it in Newark, that time of the day, like, literally probably 2 hours and 45 minutes in traffic.
Wait. So the venues in New Jersey are the Rock and the Rack?
That's correct. The Rock and the Rack. That's accurate. So I bailed on going to Texas Seton Hall. It was just too much driving. I was so happy that I made this decision because I would have hated myself if I was in the car on the drive back. Shouts to Jeff Borzello. So you had like Rothstein, Dan O'Neill, Jeff Borzello, some other national media members all understandably went to the game they should have gone to, Texas versus Seton Hall. But you go to that game instead of scooting down to Piscataway, where there was pandemonium in Piscataway. That's a tough one there. Congrats to Seton Hall. They get this win, and in doing so, further validate the Big East, further validate themselves. Seton Hall is 8-1 right now. You know, top 25 level team, as far as I'm concerned. The only loss is by 3 points down in Fort Myers against Ohio State, which won that MTE. They got a win over Michigan at Michigan. That's a preseason top 10 team. They got a win at home over Texas, preseason top 5 team in the eyes of most there. Pirates, Kevin Willard. Man, they're getting it done. How impressed are you with what Seton Hall has been able to do? Because coming into the season, I think an objective statement would be going into the season, there was thoughts that Seton Hall could be an NCAA tournament team, but not necessarily projected to be a top 3 team in the Big East, a top 30 team in the country. Right now, they'd certainly have that look, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, they lost Sandro, so my expectations for them were fairly minimal. I think my takeaway from this game is more frustration with Texas, but not in the sense of it being a bleak situation for the Longhorns. They were my preseason national title winner, Texas was. And so to see them start off with losses in their only 2 games to date against quality opposition is a little bit disheartening. But I do feel okay about it because there's a couple of things here. One, their 2 quality opponents that they've played have both been true road games, Gonzaga and Seton Hall. And I anecdotally at least think that being on the road this year is even more difficult than in years past. After the sterile environments of last season, it seems like student sections are even a bit rowdier than pre-pandemic. And so, you know, I think it's going to be harder than normal to win on the road this year. So I'm not panicking about Texas, but I am annoyed that Trey Mitchell, who had his best game as a Texas Longhorn last night, didn't get a 2-point shot attempt in the final 9 minutes of the game. That to me was unacceptable because he had been the best player on that offense throughout the game. He still ends the game as Texas's leading scorer, and he doesn't get a shot in the paint or even inside the arc when the game is on the line, despite the fact that he was on the floor for all that time. So that was my uh, my takeaway, not to slight the Pirates, but I mean, clearly a phenomenal start for Kellen Willard and his group, but just a little bit of annoyance, I guess, at the way Texas executed down the stretch.
I'll get to Texas in a second. Credit to Bryce Aiken. He, a former Harvard player, he has dealt with injury issues for 4 years. Hits a huge three, two foul shots in the final minute of this game. Just, you know, he only had 10 points, but they needed him. They don't win the game without him. He was, he hit one big three after going, I think, 0-for-7 leading up to that point. Jared Roden made some nice plays as well. Man, Seton Hall, they just seem to have enough there overall. By the way, Texas, you mentioned Texas. They were, I think, 1-of-13. They were 1-of-13 from 3-point range. 0.7.
Yeah. How often are Carr, Ramey, and Jones going to combine to go 1-of-10 from three? And that's what they did.
That's a good point. That hurts them a lot. They went real time. They went 30. Texas went 30 minutes without making a basket because it was 58-56. Then the official, if you did not see this, thank goodness, the officials had to confirm with the official scorebook about the foul situation. So they do this going into a TV timeout, and then they take another 15 minutes to figure this out. And this is when the game was at a fever pitch, final media timeout. They come, you know, it didn't totally burn Texas because they wound up hitting a couple shots there, but they did go 30 minutes in real time without a made basket there. And that did not help matters whatsoever. As for Texas overall, 6-2, the only two good teams they played have been on the road. I saw them in person against Gonzaga. They lost by 12. It might as well have been by double that. They played decently enough against Seton Hall. And I'm not going to, you know, overreact to the Longhorns at this point, but it was a preseason top five team and it hasn't had that look yet. All the other wins have come against Houston Baptist, San Jose State, Sam Houston State, UT Rio Grande Valley.
It's a light schedule. I mean,
Northern Colorado. I think
Stanford is like their only like non-conference game of note left. And Stanford's like, you know, 200 or something in the net. So it's like, yeah. I mean, they're not going to be able to go out in Big 12 and struggle and go 10-10 and just, you know, think that their bid is safe. I mean, they're going to actually have to make some hay a little bit in the Big 12 because they don't have anything on their resume. I think they will, though, because they've got, I think, a favorable Big 12 schedule because Texas, they don't play Kansas or Baylor until the final month of the season. So, like, their first, like, 12 Big 12 games or something are against the weaker opposition in the league. And then I think as this team gels, figures out the way Chris Beard wants to play, understands that, oh, if Trey Mitchell's dominating in the paint, maybe we should pass him the ball in crunch time. As things like those, like that start to come together for Texas, I think they'll hit their stride in the final month. Or that's at least what I'm telling myself since I, you know, picked them to win the national title.
Hey, listen, rough night for you and me. My preseason national championship pick, those Boilers. You took the
You can still feel pretty good about that one.
I know I can, but you know, just losses for both. That's all I'm saying. Oh, by the way, here's the other way. Like, I'm loving having you on this podcast. That's a good little change of pace. Hopefully everyone's enjoying. Don't worry, Parrish, we'll be back soon enough. If you are hopping into the YouTube show in the middle and like, what is going on? That is David Cobb right there. He is one of our CBS sports writers and he is hopping on. Parrish is having his wisdom teeth removed. So we are dealing with that over the next couple of days. I do not know if he will be available on Sunday or not. I don't know. We hope so, but we're going to play it by ear. This is David Cobb. He picked Texas to win the national championship in the preseason. We'll see how that goes. You mentioned Stanford's the last opponent non-con. Since they're in the Big 12, you got the SEC Big 12 the last week of January.
Yeah, Rick Barnes going back to Austin.
Correct. So Rick Barnes will go back to Austin. I've actually, quick aside, I've talked to Beard about that. He's going to make that to be a huge thing, which will be really cool for Rick Barnes. That's going to be an awesome weekend, but that's not till end of January. So they do have one more good non-conference opportunity. Stanford's just not going to get it done. That game is in Vegas next Sunday there. And point I was going to make was this was a preseason top five team. Haven't lived up to that. Just haven't done it yet. Maybe they'll get there. I was skeptical all along. I did not put them in the top five. I almost begrudgingly, you know, I get so annoyed with myself when I do this. I begrudgingly put Texas in the top 10 because I talked myself into how everyone else was saying that you really can't justify not having them. I really did think that Texas was going to be closer to that 12-15 range, but no excuses. I put them top 10. I'll own it. They haven't looked as good as I thought they'd be. But after having spent time with them at Gonzaga, you know, to be fair, it's not like the staff thought they'd be 6-2 with these both of these losses, but there's a real sense that come find us the end of January and see what we look like then.
Yeah. So look at Beard's track record. He had a Little Rock team that was awful, turned around and went in 30 games his first year there. Texas Tech, he has him in the national title game his second year. And now this Texas team he's got. My only issue with the roster construction at Texas, that they don't have like an actual wing. Like if they played against a Justin Moore or an Agbaji, which they will, they've got guards and they've got bigs, but I don't feel like they've got guys in that 6'5" to 6'7" range who would slot as a, you know, traditional small forward, who are versatile and dynamic in that way. That's just a little bit of an irksome quality with that roster, because it's Ramey, Jones, Carr, all guards. And then they've got more bigs than they know what to do with. I just don't think Christian Bishop is, you know, versatile enough to really classify as a wing at this point in his career. So just a minor beef there. But I do believe in Chris Beard. He's done so much with, you know, in the first years of his previous tenures. And he's got enough talent on that team to where, you know, I think they could still compete in the Big 12.
Other game of note from Thursday was just Iowa State getting the win. No doubt about it over Iowa. So ISU remains undefeated at this point. TJ, yes or no? I'm springing this on you. We didn't talk about pre-pod. TJ Altzelberger, you know, 4.5 weeks in, national coach of the year front runner. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely. I mean, you inherited a 2-win team and you've what, quadrupled that in the first month of the season. That's really unbelievable. That's, I don't even know. I don't even think there's a debate to be had after Purdue loses last night. If we were handing out the award this morning, step aside, Matt Painter, got to be Altzelberger.
It's got to be Altzelberger at this point. And then Tommy Lloyd, number two, we'll see what he does this weekend. And we'll get to those in a second there. Here's where we're at conference wise, a little more than a month into the season, win percentage wise. This is the order. Big 12. This is win percentage. Big 12. Big East, SEC, then the Big Ten, thought maybe the best conference of the preseason, fourth in win percentage, and then there's a drop. ACC is 5. The WCC is 6th, ahead of the Pac-12, and then the American is 8th. Big 12 has won 83.3% of its games in non-conference play. Big East, 79%. SEC is at 78%. Big Ten, 75.7% win percentage. Give it up to the Big 12 and Big East. They've been good so far. Obviously, Iowa State helps that cause with the win there last night. So WCC right now, we've talked about it on the podcast a couple times before here. To me, it's looking like it could be maybe almost should be a four-bid league between Gonzaga, BYU, St. Mary's, and San Francisco. We are now at 34-5. For those teams, they're all top 40 in KenPom. Then there's a drop. Santa Clara sitting at 87. Loyola Marymount, which could be spoiler in that league, is at 108. It's not going to have an at-large case there, but give it up to the WCC. Yes, the bottom half's going to drag it down, but the Pac-12 has been atrocious, and I think it's even money right now with those leagues who gets more bids to the tournament. Pac-12 right now has 3 legitimate teams. USC is undefeated. Arizona is undefeated. UCLA is 7-1. And then after that, maybe Washington State will get into the picture. I think there's a chance. But like, you know, we're looking at what Oregon's 5-4, huge letdown. Stanford hasn't made any kind of move. Utah 6-3. Pac-12 will probably work its way to a 4-bid league, but there's no guarantee of it. We could be looking
at the most disappointing, in the Pac-12.
I mean, Oregon State went to the Elite Eight and is 1-8. So
yes. I mean, what is happening there?
I don't know. I have no idea. Shouts to Wayne Tinkle. He goes on, and I said this at the time. I think I said it in our Pac-12 preview. Oregon State making last season's Elite Eight is one of the most random bends of the universe for the NCAA tournament, maybe the most ever. This is a team that was 10-10 at one point. Don't worry, I'm not going to harp on OSU too much here. But they were 10-10 overall. And they wind up getting in because they win the auto bid. They beat Tennessee, Oklahoma State with Cade, Loyola Chicago, which kicked the crap out of Illinois, and then they lose by six to Houston, and now they're 1-8. He gets a $17 million extension. So yeah, they're a huge letdown there. Big 12, Big East, just real quick to focus on those before we pick the games this week. Big 12 right now, here are the teams that are in good position. Baylor, Kansas, Texas Tech is 7-1. Mentioned Texas, Oklahoma 7-2. OSU doesn't qualify for the postseason, kind of tossed them aside. West Virginia just beat UConn at home. UConn fans furious over the officiating in that game. West Virginia's 8-1. We mentioned Iowa State's undefeated there. TCU still 7-1. David Cobb, over under 7.5 NCAA tournament bids for the Big 12 this year.
Got to go under on it just because of the fact that only 9 are eligible. That's so right. I'm going under just kind of on a principal number there due to the fact they've only got 9 that can actually get in.
I would also go under. Now, TCU has not played a great schedule. It did just win over Utah. But right now, the point is 8 out of the 9 fan bases have optimism that can get to the Oklahoma State doesn't count because it's not eligible. Kansas State's really the only school right now that doesn't have true optimism that it's going to get there. As for the Big East, here's how it ranks in KenPom. I mentioned to you the 1-4 win percentage. Right now, Big 12 is 1. Again, this is with preseason bias factored in. But Big 12, as it should be, is 1. Then Big 10, a little bit of a gap, SEC. And then 4 is the Big East there. I don't know. Big East has been pretty impressive to me. You got Nova. We'll see what they can do this weekend. We're going to preview that game. UConn at 8-2, still good. UConn wasn't at full strength when it lost on the road at West Virginia. Completely acceptable loss. Xavier, 8-1. Seton Hall, 8-1. Providence, which has not even received a vote for the AP Top 25, which is a joke. Providence is 9-1 and owns wins over Wisconsin and Texas Tech. What are we doing here? It's done
3-0
well
and quad 1.
Creighton and Marquette only have 2 losses to this point. Even DePaul, 7-1. Haven't played a tough schedule there. It's been pretty interesting. Any other thoughts on the leagues before we start picking some games, bud?
No, I mean, it's just the ACC's lack of anything stands out as well. I mean, the WCC has them doubled up in the AP poll this week. I mean, Duke's still the only team in that league in the polls. It's just what's going on there. I mean, it's kind of sad.
It is. All right, we're going to do Final 4-1. So Parrish didn't get his picks. This is going to mess up the tally, but it won't fully mess it up. I've got a ski weekend planned in January, so I just won't make the picks for that episode. Parrish doesn't make the picks for this episode, and at the end of the season, we'll have, I believe, picked for the same amount of games here. So Cobb picked the N1. Nada asked that we provide these, as opposed to GP normally does his 4 games, then mine, and the last one isn't necessarily in chronological order. These are all in chronological order. Cobb has the 3 game, but we're going to start. This is a stacked weekend. Stacked weekend. If you're listening to this podcast Friday afternoon, Friday evening, or you're getting to it for whatever reason on Saturday morning, if you are unaware, we've got some tasty, tasty action around the sport here. Before we get to the games that we're going to pick, here are the games we're not picking, just to be aware of. Friday, Murray State at Memphis. By the way, I thought we were going to get Cobb on here and we wouldn't have a Memphis flavor. He is in Memphis right now. I'm still podcasting with a co-host who's in Memphis. Are you going to this game? John, you know, John, you covered the Grizzlies. You're familiar. I'm curious.
Hey, look, Jaw's in health and safety protocol, so I can't go see my guy. He'll be watching from home, so I'll watch from home too. I wanted to give you a shout out, Matt, for bringing me on today, because you know what? You could have been like Memphis. You could have been the veteran who was standoffish towards the young guys on the roster, and you could have played some hero ball, some isolation ball. You could have dribbled around out on the perimeter and just gone solo on this pod, but instead you incorporated the freshman. So I appreciate that.
I did. And before we get rolling on this weekend, I'm well aware that Auburn, an NCAA Committee on Infractions decision is coming on Auburn in a matter of probably 90 minutes from when we're doing this right now. If that goes bad, I will do a solo emergency podcast on YouTube. It will also be in the feed. So today is just absurd.
So when it gets into the crunch time, then you take your ball, you wave me off to the wing.
In all seriousness though, Cobb, it's just me and Cobb. Parrish is under. Parrish is unconscious and Boone's in the hospital. So you might have to do a lot of the writing here, and they're going to
like, I feel like this is like Steven Izzo, like getting the hey, you're in, and like the crunch time of like a Big Ten game.
Well, we're glad we're breaking you in on this episode, because there will be we are going to mix it up for YouTube purposes. You know, mix in some KB and some David here a little more frequently. And I think you're doing wonderful here. OK, before we pick the game. So that is a Friday night game. Only one of note. Murray State at Memphis. See what happens there. Saturday, noon, FS1, BYU versus Creighton at the Sanford Pentagon in South Dakota. Hopefully those teams can play, get a good game in, and no one gets COVID. 1:30 on ESPN2, Arkansas at Oklahoma. Arkansas has played a little bit of an underwhelming schedule, so that's a good test for the Hogs there. See if they can remain undefeated. 2 o'clock on ESPNU. You've got Colorado State undefeated versus Mississippi State in Fort Worth. Mississippi State was a trendy top 5, top 6 team in the SEC in the preseason. If it's going to validate that, it's got to win that game against Nico Medved's Rams, who, in my opinion, are operating like a top 20 team in college basketball. Certainly one of the hottest teams in the sport yet to lose a game. 2:30 on Fox, UCLA at Marquette. Mick Cronin does not schedule scared. It's the only coaches to ever go from the first four to the final four. Mick Cronin, Shaka Smart, Fox, 2:30 on Saturday, UCLA at Marquette. Again, the only thing we have this weekend in college football, Army-Navy on CBS. You want to make sure you watch that as well. It means the college basketball schedule's got plenty to offer. 3:30 on ESPN2, Bonnies versus UConn at The Rock. I don't quite know why this game is in Newark, New Jersey, but I do know that only Virginia Tech and UConn agreed to play St. Bonaventure in the non-conference among power conference teams. Good on Dan Hurley. I haven't talked to Dan about this. Knowing him, he is 100% regretting this decision right now because of the fact that the team is banged up. Sanogo wasn't available. I think they had 3 guys out for that game earlier. So Bonnies could really use this for their non-conference resume and really their resume overall, because the A-10 is only going to offer so many opportunities. That's a 3:30 tip on ESPNU. I think that one could be a bit chaotic there. Then 6 o'clock on ESPN2, undefeated LSU against Georgia Tech at State Farm Arena. I'm telling you right now, this is upset alert stuff. Georgia Tech's women's team just beat UConn on Thursday. The men's team is pretty good from 3, and LSU just lets teams shoot from 3 like crazy, crazy. If Tech is hitting from beyond the arc, keep it in mind there. LSU is the better team.
Hey, how dare you insult the number 2 team in the net like that?
Hey, listen, is that where they are? I think zone is 1.
LSU is number 2 in the net.
Kind of scooting under there. This is the weekend for teams that have had really good starts to really, you know, get some run on the Sunday pod and maybe some more national love there. That's a 6 o'clock tip. 8:30 on FS1, Cincinnati at Xavier. Love it. This is a good Saturday here. Cincinnati, first year under Wes Miller, not a ton of expectation. You go and you win at Xavier. If you do that, you change the whole dynamic. The paradigm shifts on Bearcat Nation if they can get that win. Xavier's the better team. Xavier should win. But the point is, Wes Miller has been able to bring in more optimism and I think just positive vibes for that program in the first year, the first 5 weeks of the season, than I think even Bearcats fans thought. That's a really, really cool thing. And then 2 others on Sunday to be aware of. Virginia Tech plays at Dayton. At Dayton. Normalize this. Good on you, Mike Young. Don't schedule scared. Dayton's a little down. Yeah, it's a little bit of a dangerous game, but if you get the win, you get a valuable non-conference road win. And then 4:30 on Sunday, Florida is going to play Maryland at the Barclays Center. Shouts to Adi Joseph, our managing editor. He will be in the building for that. Those are the games we are not picking. Now it is time for the final 4-1. I told you, we have a stacked weekend here. Saturday, noon on Big Ten Network. Wisconsin at Ohio State on David Leidy Court. Ohio State is favored by 4, according to KenPom. What is your pick, David Cobb?
Yeah, I've got Ohio State -4. Now, do you want me to give you any reasons why? Or
yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay. I like the fact that Ohio State should be able to draw Wisconsin 7-footers away from the rim a little bit and open up the floor here. Now, I mean, it's not like Ohio State has a bunch of really uber talented guards who can get into the paint, but I think it's going to make Wisconsin really uncomfortable when EJ Liddell and Kyle Young start putting up 3s against their 7-footers. And I think Liddell certainly can use his outside shooting ability to draw those 7-footers out and then drive around them and get to the hole.
I like it. Succinct, fast. We'll make this pick segment faster than normal here. I'm going to take Ohio State in this spot to cover this number. Wisconsin has been fantastic. Johnny Davis has to be on the short list. I'm talking National Player of the Year, candidates through the first 4.5 weeks of the season. I'm talking top three, top four. He's been terrific. Wisconsin coming back down 22 at home against Indiana, matching a program record. It showed a ton there. It really did. But I like Ohio State in the spot, and I like that number. So give me the Buckeyes to cover. Ohio State, by the way, looking to go 3-2 against NCAA tournament level teams if it can get the win here. Saturday. Man, there's a lot of good games. This is my favorite game of the weekend. Saturday, 5 Eastern on Fox. Arizona at Illinois on Luther Head Court. Arizona is a 2-point dog. That's right. Illinois is favored by 2 in this game. Who you got?
I'm going Arizona straight up. How about this, Matt? Both of Illinois' losses this year are to first-year head coaches. Marquette and Shaka Smart and Cincinnati and Wes Miller. I think Tommy Lloyd makes it 0-3 against the first-year coaches because, I mean, let's be real. Nobody's playing better in the country right now than Arizona.
Arizona has the largest margin of victory on average of any team in the country, over 32 points a game. They score more a game than anyone else, north of 90. They aren't allowing opponents to score 60 a game. I don't have the net rankings up in front of me right now. I believe Arizona is number one in the net now. After what
do they have a case, Matt, to be number one in the AP poll if they win this game?
That's correct. So first I want to play this. This is Tommy Lloyd. This is what he said. I guess this got Illinois fans a little bit fired up because it was shared out of context. This is what Tommy Lloyd said. I love this drop here. This is what he said about going and getting a win on the road. Arizona coach Tommy Lloyd. This is a 22-second clip here.
I mean, there's nothing better except playing in McHale when it's full of going on the road and kicking someone's ass. I mean, there's nothing better than that. And, you know, it's going to be a huge task. And we're not going in there cocky. We're not going in there arrogant. We're going in there knowing it's going to be a great challenge, and we're hopefully going to be up for it.
Love it. Love that. I love that spirit from Tommy Lloyd here. These programs have a history, obviously, the most famous one being in 2005, but they met previously in the tournament there, and they've met recently as well. This is the kind of game to me, Cobb, where these programs should just make a point to try and play each other every 3 to 5 years or whatever. Do a home and home, take a couple years off and do it again. They are congruent non-conference schools and brands. They're huge, yeah. In my opinion, both top 20 jobs in the country. I love this. I also love the matchup here. Kofi Coburn has been terrific, almost kind of quietly terrific to this point, but he is going to get an intriguing matchup in this game. Because Arizona, come on now, Christian Coloco, he's 7'1", 230, a different kind of big. This is a fascinating game.
Yeah, and the thing is, Arizona can throw a different, like, they can throw Tubelis at him. They can bring Umar Ballo in. They got three dudes that are, you know, that can reasonably defend or at least attempt to defend Kofi Coburn.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And then, like, Benedict Mathurin shooting 60% as a wing from two-point range this point this season, 34% from three. Arizona's weakness, if you want to call it that right now, is that they're pedestrian from beyond the three-point line. We'll see if they can overcome that. Defensively, they're very, very good. Here's the thing. They're great on defense, and they play fast. They love to play fast there. Illinois, not a plodding team. They're just more kind of an average-tempo team there. We've seen what Alfonso Plummer's been able to do. He's been a big step-up guy. Illinois Twitter lost its damn mind when he had a huge game earlier this week, did Plummer, when Illinois beat Iowa. And I tweeted out that Alfonso Plummer has been what I thought Andre Curbelo would be. And by that, I meant he has been the game-changing player alongside of Kofi Coburn. Illinois fans thought that I was saying that Alfonso Plummer is like the exact same kind of like point guard. I don't know. People take this stuff way too seriously. That wasn't the point. Dude is an automatic scorer. Hasn't missed a foul shot this season. He's 28 for 28, 58% from 2-point range, 43% from 3-point range. He has been huge because Curbelo hasn't been available due to issues with a concussion there. So, you know, keep that in mind. Another factor with this. I do love this game. Did you make the pick? Who did you pick?
Yeah, I went Arizona. I got them, you know, against the spread and straight up. I think my prediction for CBS for our post is going to be Arizona 88, Illinois 81.
Give me Illinois in this spot at home, but I'm not confident about it. I will take Illinois here. Arizona on the road, biggest challenge yet, is a big one. All right, the next game is your pick. Do you want to read it or you want me to set it up here?
No, yeah. I mean, I went Kentucky-Notre Dame. which on the surface, given Notre Dame's struggles, doesn't look like it should be all that compelling of a matchup. But given the fact that it's at Notre Dame and that, Matt, this will be Kentucky's first game against a top 100 KenPom opponent since the season opening loss to Duke. Since that time, they've only played one team in the top 275 at KenPom, and that was Ohio. So I think this is a more challenging spot for Kentucky than you might think just by looking at it on the surface.
I'd had Oscar Tshiebwe was in my lead for the court report on Wednesday. He's averaging better than 15 points and 15 rebounds per game. I talked to Tshiebwe after they won over Southern. He maintains, like he said in the preseason, he wants to average 20 rebounds a game. I think that's a bridge too far. Averaging 20 in the modern college landscape at a power conference program, that used to happen in the 50s and 60s and even into the early 70s. I don't know. Can he get to 17 or 18? He's like, I'm guaranteeing I can do it. Credit to him.
Yeah, I read your court report. It was really good. And I respect his interest in that facet of the game, because if you're talking about skill sets that are going to make you marketable in the NBA, rebounding isn't exactly at the top of the list. And so for a guy to be that hungry to go and get boards, it does, I think, make a huge impact still on the college game. I think it's undervalued still in the NBA. So I think he's maybe in the eyes of a niche population, adding value to what he does. I think most scouts would tell him, focus that energy on expanding your shooting range. But it's cool to see a guy really embracing that element of the game.
I agree. Give me Kentucky here. At least Cal's playing a true road game. This one, I believe, makes up for, I talked to Bray about this over the summer. I think they got this game because they had to cancel or push back the Michigan deal across the pond. So I think this is what subbed in for it. Kentucky fans will know 100% sure. I'm glad that Kentucky's just playing on the road. Notre Dame's not as good as Kentucky probably wanted it to be. And in that way, it comes to be kind of almost tricky. This is, by the way, this game is on Luke Herangode Court. Fourth game, Saturday, 10 Eastern on ESPN2. I'm telling you, we have a stacked weekend, folks. Houston at Alabama on Jamichael Green Court. Alabama's favored by one. Who you got?
Michael Green, great former Grizzly. So going Houston to win and cover. I got him winning this one by about four. Here's the deal. We all know Houston's got one of the best defenses in the country. Alabama's lead guards have been a little bit turnover prone, and I think Houston's going to be able to keep them from getting in that spin cycle of driving and kicking and getting all the open looks that they would normally be accustomed to getting.
Bama was the third-ranked team in defensive efficiency last season. Not quite that good so far this season. Houston, right now, number two in defensive efficiency. Could be the best defensive team Kelvin Sampson could be. Don't know. We'll have to see that he's ever had, which is really saying something because his teams obviously love to really grind you out. Alabama has a back-to-back AAC situation going on. They play Houston now. On Tuesday, they will play against Memphis there. So we'll see if they can go 2-0, 1-1, or 0-2 against the American. Houston does seem like a legitimate team again. Doesn't yet have a top 50 win. This is a big spot here on the road. I have to take Alabama. Their four-guard attack is too good. I do think this will be a little bit of an ugly game. Again, we're looking at Saturday, 10 Eastern at night on ESPN2. Give me the Tide to cover. Last game, Sunday, 3 Eastern on ABC. This is the most high-profile game. You've got Villanova at Baylor. Neither of these coaches schedule scared. Again, running theme in today's episode here. This will be on Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler Court. Got to give both those dudes their due. Jared Butler was actually technically the Final Four mop. It should have been Davion Mitchell. Baylor won the tournament for many reasons, but Davion Mitchell at the tail end of it was the reason. Baylor on its home floor, undefeated, trying to play for the number one ranking. And we'll get to that question you posed to me. It's favored by 4 points. Who you got?
Well, I mean, I know Gary has a lot of respect for Scott Drew and Amy Drew and Homer Drew and Bryce Drew and for all their children and pets and all that. So with Gary being out, I'm going to stand in here with more hair than him and say Baylor wins and covers the 4-point spread. My concern with this game from the Villanova side is they don't have an elite rim protector. And if you go look at the numbers, Baylor gets more of its points inside the arc than you might expect for a team that has as many quality shooters as they do. So I think they're going to be able to get into the paint and finish in the paint against Villanova.
Hold on. I got Bryce Drew on the line. Bryce, you guys, what are your thoughts on this game?
This is Bryce and I don't care.
Okay. Fair enough, man. Well, all right. Understandable. I'm going to take Baylor to win and to cover. Villanova, if it were to win this game, would have a case for number one, but I don't know about that. There's other results that are going to impact this, but give me Baylor here in this spot. Cobb, the point you just brought up is an excellent one. By the way, this is the third meeting between these schools, and they met already in this calendar year. Baylor won easily in the Sweet 16 back in March. Baylor also won when these teams played in November of 2019. They won by 9, which impacted what you brought up earlier, the rotating cast of number one teams early in that season. That game also factored into that overall. Baylor has been quietly awesome. This will be its moment to kind of return. It's not like it's been completely off the radar, but let's be honest, Cobb. Has Baylor been getting the kind of recognition that a normal undefeated reigning national champion would get in this situation? Doesn't it feel like they haven't been kind of getting their press so far?
Yeah, they've flown under the radar. I mean, their biggest games were in that battle for Atlantis. It gets lost in the shuffle of Feast Week and, you know, the weird times that those games start and stuff. But, I mean, they've been legit. Kendall Brown is, like, unbelievable as a freshman. He takes, like, 5 shots a game, and he makes every single one of them. And then he makes a lot of impact plays defensively. Baylor's been really, really good, again, despite losing Mitchell, Teague, and Butler. I mean, it's just, like, my one concern with Baylor and the Big 12 in general. I think the team that wins the Big 12, it'll go to the coach that controls their chaos guard the best. Think about Baylor, James Akinjo. Yes. Like, he makes some spectacular plays, but he also turns the ball over like 3+ times a game. Then you look at Kansas and Remy Martin. Yeah. Like, Bill Self openly acknowledges that, like, this is a different kind of player, you know? And then I think you can even take that same comparison to Texas and Marcus Carr. And somebody who's can be a little bit, I don't know, like, he's used to kind of running the show, you know, at Minnesota. So those three guards and the way that their coaches utilize them and corral them, I guess, would be, I think, a huge deciding factor in the way the Big 12 shakes out.
Look at this analysis and evaluation you're getting from David Cobb on the podcast right now. Hey, if you're listening, please go drop a review or two. Give David some props here on the Apple Podcast. Let him know. If you're in the comments, reminder, if you have not already liked this episode on YouTube, go ahead, click that like button. Let's increase our awareness and presence there. Those are our 5 games. I said I'd answer a few reader questions. I'm going to do that right now, but a couple of quick notes before I do that and close out the pod, because I got to admit, we're going longer than I thought, but I promise you I was going to do a live reader Q&A and I will live up to that. Kansas-Missouri does return this weekend, which is wonderful to have back. Missouri is just trash, unfortunately. Kansas will probably win by 20, but at least we get that game back, that rivalry back. It means a ton. I saw Jesse Newell report that, you know, the student section camping out situation was busier than any other game so far this season, kind of recently, aside from like super high profile games. That's great. Washington Gonzaga is not getting played this weekend. Washington has lost a 3rd straight game to COVID issues within that program. And from what I understand, most, if not all, the players were vaccinated. So that is troublesome for Washington, which I'm not saying it's dodging. It's missing all of its high-profile games. So I know its fans are certainly frustrated there, and Gonzaga loses a non-conference opportunity against a power conference opponent. I'll be a little bit of an underwhelming one. And then one other just tiny note, Little Rock is leaving the Sun Belt to technically join the OVC in 2022. That got announced on Thursday. Again, Auburn news is going to come down soon. If you're listening in real time live on YouTube, I'm guessing I'm going to need to do an emergency podcast situation, and that is going to be coming soon. Okay, a few reader questions. First one says, hey, Norlander, got a question for you. There's been a lot of talk about how the ACC is down this year and in recent years. What do you and GP, why do you and GP think that is? Recruiting might start here. I can't tell you what GP thinks because he's not here. Is the ACC down? It absolutely is, unquestionably. Why is that? To a certain extent, maybe recruiting, yes. I would argue that a little bit has to do with scheduling as well. You have had, it doesn't help the situation. Let me put it this way. When you have schools that are in the top half of the conference and they simply decide, and 2020 doesn't count. I'm removing the pandemic from the situation altogether. They simply opt out of playing one or two other really good games and mix in a bye game there. That has downstream effects. It has downstream effects in terms of where you get seated, how many teams might get in overall. You've also had coaching turnover there. It has been one of the bigger mysteries, though. The ACC should never be the 5th best team in college basketball. That's where it is as we sit and talk here on this Friday morning. And there's no guaranteeing that it'll get back to that upper echelon anytime soon. We wait and see how North Carolina will be under Hubert Davis. We will wait and see how Duke will be under John Shire. Virginia is hitting a lull this season. I don't really have concerns, big picture, about Tony Bennett getting together, but this is the worst season in 9 seasons for them. Wake Forest had a coaching change. Syracuse, we just talked about them on the last episode there. Where are they headed as a program? You know, Boston College is never good. Notre Dame is in the final years under Mike Bray. Pittsburgh has not found any kind of consistency under Jeff Capel. NC State, kind of just there, you know? They need to be more in that top half, top third of the league. I think that's one of those cases where when NC State is good, it's not that, you know, college basketball is better when NC State is good. I'm not saying it's like one of those things. It's not like the Steelers are good and the NFL is amazing or anything like that, but it certainly helps the presence of the league. Like there's something really to be said for a great fan base there to kind of complete the triangle, if you will. And NC State just hasn't been that, you know? So Florida State's been good for the most part. Some of it has been to do with recruiting. But you know, the true answer, I don't think anyone has, but it has been, a little bit vexing there. Any quick thoughts from you, Cobb, on that?
No, you nailed it. And the thing I would point out, as someone who also covers football, the football side of that league is struggling as well. I mean, Clemson had a down year this season, and it immediately tanked that conference's chances of competing for a spot in the college football playoff. So there's some larger scale issues, I think, that need to be addressed there. And, you know, it's a shifting you know, conference landscape, and that impacts both of their, you know, high revenue sports. And the TV deals that they're in, at least certainly from the football side, are not doing them any favors, because it's putting them behind the eight ball and the ability to compete. And I would assume some of that trickles over into basketball as well.
I'm seeing a question from Patrick Cassidy in the chat saying, what's your beef with Jeff Goodman, Norlander? I have no beef. Jeff Goodman is obsessed with me. He is in love with me. He cannot resist this. And so it is what it is. What do you want from me? But, you know, he just cannot help himself. Another question here. Recently, the NCAA has experienced high recruiting turnover, like one and dones. How do you think this has affected the sport? Do you think this has been a positive or a negative? I think it's a more positive than negative. It's one of those deals, like, it is what it is. You get superstar players. It helps college basketball to have Zion Williamson, Cade Cunningham, Trae Young, go back, Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Durant. These are superstar players. They're often not the only ones. There are second, third, fourth year players that become superstars, that become first-team All-Americans. We get that often as well. I'm not going to completely go off on a tangent because I want to wrap the podcast pretty quick here, but I think it is somewhat gaslighting to suggest that college basketball has fallen off of a cliff because the average sports fan lacks the capacity to follow the sport because a bunch of dudes aren't staying for 3 and 4 years anymore. College basketball used to have 5% of the television inventory that it has now in the 80s and early 90s. And this idea that back then college basketball was the number two or number three sport in America and was, you know, riding at highs that we see the NBA at today is just not true. As far as I can tell, talking to people who were there, it's just not true. Yes, it did have superstar names that stayed for a long time, but this sport is followed literally by tens of millions of people. Is it as popular as college football? No. Is it as popular as the NBA? No. Is it as popular as the NFL? No. That's okay. It's never going away. So I don't fret over this. And I think it is a default lazy talking point. This idea that because you have superstar top five level picks going into college basketball and leaving after 7 or 8 months, it is killing the product. Think about it. What it would be otherwise. One, you wouldn't have the names. That's not good for college basketball. But two, the sport always produces stars no matter what. So, by the way, the two of the three most highest rated non-football broadcasts of 2021, college basketball games. Any thoughts, Cobb?
No, you nailed it. The other thing too, you'd rather have them going and playing one season in college basketball than going and doing G League Ignite or going to Australia or going to the Overtime Elite, you know. So the fact that you got some one and dones in college basketball, I think is a good thing because it means it's competing with those alternative options.
All right, last one, then we'll get out of here because we're going on 70 plus minutes. Rutgers, man. Wow. It really went long there. Norlander, when did you get your first love for basketball and college basketball in particular? The very first memory I ever have of college basketball, first one, is being excited for UNLV in the title game in 1990. My parents wouldn't let me stay up for it. This was about the time I was really starting. I was big on Cubs and Bears when I was young in the 80s, Walter Payton, Andre Dawson, all that good stuff. Then Jordan starts to get really good, and I get interested in the Cubs. Like, I have vivid memories sitting, leaning against, what are those pillows called with the little arms? Husbands. Leaning against the husband in my parents' living room watching. My parents let me stay up to watch Bulls-Lakers. 1991 finals, vivid, vivid memories. Right before that, though, I wanted to watch UNLV play in the championship. My parents wouldn't let me. I remember waking up the next morning asking who won the basketball game and thinking, like, UNLV, that's a weird combination of letters and you know, discovering a love early. And then once we got to like 92, 93, I was obsessed with the Chicago Bulls. And rightfully so. I was far from the only one, but I'm a white kid living in the Northeast at this point. And then the college basketball love kind of came organically. To be honest, a lot of it was SportsCenter reruns in the morning, Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann, then Craig Kilborn. Love it. Kilby, love it. And so ACC tournaments, all this stuff. I remember Dick Vitale having a huge influence on me. And so that was kind of it. You know, I lived in Vermont. I wasn't at a Division I hotbed. I actually did like Kentucky in the mid-1990s. That 95-96 Kentucky team is my favorite team of all time because it's really the team that made me love what college basketball could be, what it was. Ron Mercer, I was trying to be Ron Mercer in my driveway. So maybe in an off-season episode, I can go on an even deeper dive there. But that's kind of the start of it. That's, you know, around 8, 9 years old, wanting to watch UNLV. I think the first Final Four game my parents ever let me stay up and watch was 93. Because I watched the Weber timeout. I watched that in real time. I definitely remember that one. I can't remember if I ever watched the Duke ones in real time or not, but that's me. As we wrap, Cobb, what about you? What got you into basketball? How did you?
Yeah, actually, Kentucky had an influence on my interest in college basketball as well. So I got a lot of folks in Kentucky, and they tried to indoctrinate me at an early age with the Cat's Paws Kentucky basketball yearbook that they would give to me every year. And so the first year that I paid attention to college basketball was the year Tubby won the national title. They beat Rick Majerus in the national championship game with Scott Padgett and Hashimu Evans and those guys. We had it recorded on VHS. So I didn't have cable until I was like in middle school. And so anyway, I watched that Kentucky Utah national title game so many times. And then of course, One Shining Moment, honestly, I'm not just saying that for the CBS brand, like had a huge impact on like just understanding the big moments of college basketball and what they mean. And then I guess the other one that I probably did in my driveway more times than I can count is Bryce Drew's, you know, shot for Valparaiso to beat Ole Miss. I mean, I just, you know, that's an iconic moment, you know, from college basketball in my childhood that certainly had an impact on the way I saw the game.
Man, I could do 3-4 hours of a podcast on where I was and reactions and reliving certain huge basketball moments between the ages of basically like 10 and 25 for me. 10 and 40, why not? Hey, Cobb, you passed the audition. Great stuff here, man. Absolutely. Look at Nada putting the shouts to on the YouTube. That ain't happening, my man. Not my deal. The only shouts I'll give right now is to Kyle Boone. Parrish literally is unconscious right now. They're in his mouth. Dead tooth. Shame. Thank you to everyone for listening and for watching on YouTube. Please do subscribe to the YouTube channel. Go give David Cobb some nice comments in the Apple reviews. And I could be doing an emergency podcast less than an hour from now on Auburn. My anticipation is that will be the case. Bruce Pearl, remember, Auburn self-imposed postseason ban last season. We'll see if the Committee on Infractions winds up hammering them again or giving any sort of punishment to Pearl. We'll wait and see on that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We appreciate you. And another episode's coming.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.